Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Oh, indeed. And so many people bereaved. Our thoughts go to all of them, and may all of them rest in peace also. Clem, I pay for my insurance monthly, says Mary. I've been notified that it's to go up by between 19.5% and 22%. Well, Mary, what I would do is shop around and tell them that you won't accept that particular one. There's great value to be got out there, and if you're with the same company a number of years, it's time for you to change. Patent. Come on, Pat. I've just got a photo of the Pope wearing a Kildare jersey with the big Brady family logo in the middle of it. Pat Tinsley, well-known for photographers, says, Clem, we may not win on the wing, but we certainly have a prayer. Viva the Lilies, says Pat Tinsley. Great job, Pat. I remember that photo from a couple of years ago. Was it you were responsible and came up for that anyway? I think it's a great one and merits a lot more circulation in regard to that. It's about time the President questioned the government, says a texter, on all these new laws. It should have been done long ago. Well, I think the President's complaint is about the number of laws that are coming to him at the last moment, in which he has got to consider in detail, and that doesn't make for good legislation, does it? Anyway, Clem, with the heat, what heat we had, it brings the oil up out of the tar. Yes, it does on the road. That was a feature of the recent heat wave, was the tar melting on the roads. And a listener has a complaint about the Kildare team saying, did I hear right? The Kildare team, only one player from Athy. Are we not county champions? Says a listener in regards to that. Well, of course, Kevin Feely is injured, and he would most definitely be on. Niall Kelly is in the subs as well in regards to that. And it is a county team. I know the point you're making, but isn't it all the better that there is such diversification across the various teams? Keep all your messages coming, please, anyway, in relation to that. And don't forget, later this morning, around 10:35, we're going to be conducting a rather intensive, detailed look at tomorrow and Sunday's action as well. But I want to move on now, because the Adoption Authority of Ireland has just launched its annual report 2020. The report sets out in detail the activities of the authority throughout the year, and it goes on to say that in a landmark year, for the first time since its establishment in 2010, the authority used remote technology to hold adoption hearings and orders. Indeed, didn't we all learn so much? Those unintended consequences, including ourselves in radio, with staff broadcasting still remotely. Amongst the key events, the authority lists 81 domestic adoptions granted, 353 new registrants added, 77 potential matches identified between new registrants and previously registered family members, and other details as well, with a commemorative booklet due to be published. Let's indeed hear more about this report now, because I'm joined by the Adoption Authority of Ireland CEO, Chief Executive, Patricia Carey. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you for joining us this morning. Now, I've gone through your report in detail, indeed, yesterday evening and this morning. And I want to start with a number of goals that you set out, which in goal number one, to ensure that the best interests of the child are paramount and the voice of the children is heard and responded to in a meaningful manner throughout the adoption process. How do you implement and indeed achieve that?
Well, we've done a lot of work over the last number of years, and I suppose the cornerstone of that is talking to children themselves and hearing from them how they want to be heard. And we worked with the Ombudsman for Children, who were hugely helpful in, I suppose, guiding us how children might want to be heard. Some children want to write a letter. Some children want to send us a little video. Some people want to speak directly to the board of the Adoption Authority and are very competent and confident in doing so. So we'll facilitate children in whatever way they wish to speak to the authority. Sometimes they might want to get a family member or friend to write a letter on their behalf. But we're finding more and more, particularly children over seven, they're very well able to express their views and express how they feel the adoption process has been for them, maybe sometimes in terms of delays, but also in terms of the life-changing nature of adoption for children, particularly those children maybe who are in long-term foster care and then are adopted by that family.
And on the other side of that coin, then, to ensure all relevant parties to the adoption process are heard and their respective rights are balanced appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone, I suppose, in Irish society knows how complex adoption is, and we have families of origin, birth mums and dads and grandparents sometimes who want to be heard in relation to an adoption. Some adoptions are, I won't say straightforward, but they're not contested and there's nobody objecting. But in some instances, people might object to an adoption proceeding, and I suppose it's paramount there that the rights of the child and the best interests of the child are the central point. And we keep going back to that as an organisation, that we're listening to children, that we're looking at their rights and their best interests as children being adopted.
And how does that actual process of adoption work in terms of a child becomes available for adoption and on the other side, parents who would like to adopt?
So I suppose there's a number of factors there, Clem. I suppose potential parents always have to be assessed to be eligible and suitable, and that happens through our partners, the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA. So they conduct quite a rigorous assessment. We have all sorts of families. We have sole applicants. We have same-sex couples, we have married couples, we have couples living together, and they're assessed, and in the vast majority of cases, they are deemed eligible. And then I suppose, it depends if they're adopting domestically or they're adopting from a country overseas. There's a process where the child, I suppose we're looking at the child, matching the child with the parents, not the other way around. So it's not that the parents are picking and choosing. We're saying, well, what would be the best family for this child? And some children maybe might have particular needs that the parents have been deemed expert and, that they would be able to rise to those challenges. And we look at the best interests of the child in terms of their long-term care and being parented into adulthood.
Now, I can quite understand dealing with the child that is up for adoption and indeed the prospective adoptive parents. What about the parent who is putting that child up for adoption in the process? How do they interact with you?
Well, I suppose it's a very difficult process where maybe a parent or parents make a decision again, often in the best interest for that child, and they're very difficult, sometimes traumatic decisions. They would engage, they would have counselling, extensive counselling through the Child and Family Agency. It would be, I suppose, there would be a considerable period of time before they would be signing or agreeing to final consents. We would be looking at all options with those families. And in some instances, people may choose not to place their child for adoption. There may be alternative care within their family or within the wider family. And I think we'd all agree that children want to grow up with their families, and it's in a small number of cases that's just not possible. But birth parents and sometimes grandparents would be supported throughout the process, and then maybe into the future when the child reaches adulthood, they may decide then to have some contact with their family of origin.
Okay, I'm looking through on the section on domestic adoption, for example. I'm around the page 23 to 30 area, and you received 92 adoption applications in 2020. 81 of those adoption orders were granted during the year. I'm also intrigued by adoption orders cannot be granted once a child turns 18 years of age and is legally considered to be an adult. And then there's a profile of the 81 adoption orders granted in 2020. In 40 cases, the child was 17 years of age. In 20, that seems inordinately old, and I use that term very advisedly, for a child up for adoption. Just let me add, in 23, children were aged between 12 and 16. In 13, between 7 and 11. In 3, between 2 and 6. And in 2 cases, the child was 1 year old. Because from my perspective, when I hear the word adoption, I immediately think babies.
Yes, and I think that's, I don't want to be in any way disrespectful, maybe an older, I suppose, understanding, because adoption now is multifaceted, and we have children who are adopted from foster care, which would be the larger cohort of those children who are the older age range, maybe in long-term foster care, which is very positive, but also step-family adoptions where maybe somebody has a new relationship, a new mum or a new dad, and that person then adopts the child as a step-parent. So there's a whole myriad of those types within the domestic adoptions, the 81 adoptions you mentioned. So we have step-parent adoption, foster care adoption. We have a small number of what we call domestic infant adoptions, so back to that concept of the babies, and then we have some family adoptions where children are adopted by extended family members. So it's a more, if you want to call it, modern family formation where the children are slightly older. And again, I suppose there's a quite an extensive legal process to go through to ensure that everyone's rights are respected. So sometimes children are slightly older. We would be concerned, I suppose, that we don't want to be granting adoptions at the 11th hour when a child is 17. In some instances, that's just not avoided. You know, we can't avoid that, but we would like children to be adopted as early in their childhood as possible.
Can you force an adoption? Because I noticed a section in your report in regards to applications to the High Court.
Well, I wouldn't use the word force. I think, again, you know, in some instances, consent of a birth parent might not be forthcoming for a variety of reasons. Some of them extremely complex in terms of backgrounds and difficulties people might experience. And in those interests, again, going back to my primary point, in the best interest of the child, the adoption authority may go to the High Court in order to dispense with that consent. It's not something that happens in a huge number of cases, but in cases where it is necessary, where consent cannot be obtained, particularly by a birth mother, we would apply to the High Court for that to be dispensed so that the child could be adopted by the new family.
All right. It's an extremely comprehensive report altogether, and I've talked
Thank
about
you.
Domestic adoptions. I'm looking now at page, I think, 39 or thereabouts. In fact, it's page 38 in regards to foreign adoptions. And I see, for example, there are countries like Bulgaria, China, Haiti, Philippines, India, Poland, Thailand, the United States of America, Vietnam, which has, I think, by my own understanding, become a more popular location for adoptions in recent years. How complex has that process become of foreign adoptions as more and more children are not maybe put up for adoption in this country? And I look at those stats later on.
I think children coming from other countries, one of the positives that has happened in a lot of countries is that their own domestic adoption has increased and improved. So, you know, children are being adopted in their own countries with families there, and it's in a small number of cases, and we must go through a process where the child cannot be adopted in their own country, maybe for a reason that they have additional needs. It's only in those instances that it would come to be available to be adopted overseas. Ireland has made a decision that's supposed to work with quite a small number of countries, and that's so we have really detailed oversight and connections and that we know exactly what's going on in those countries before we enter arrangements or agreements with them. And we would visit those countries, visit the childcare centres, meet with the professionals who are looking after those children. But in the vast majority of cases, the infants in those countries are adopted by families in those countries themselves, which we believe is very positive.
Could I just refer finally, and I know that I see you have a section on GDPR, and God, it's afflicted us all in regards to that, if I might put it that way. Mm. But looking on in terms of the trend in births, I notice in looking at your tables, in 1963, the birth rate, by the way, would seem to be pretty consistent in the 60,000s throughout the 60s, 70s, up to the 80s, then everyone seemingly got happy around 1980, because we had 74,000 births, and in 81, 72,000, before we moved back down into the 60,000s again. I'm looking, though, at non-marital births in the 58, 59, 60, 976, 959, 968 out of the approximate 60,000. But the adoption numbers trend between 1953, when 381 came up for adoption. In 1964, that number had risen to 1,003. and more or less maintained that figure throughout. 1,400 in 1973, dropping back to 988 for some reason in 1979, and continuing that trend. And looking then across the years, bringing it right up to the present for people, is that in 2019, 59,796 births are recorded. 22,772, about a third of those, were non-marital births. And, amazingly, only 79 up for adoption.
I think that's a really comprehensive overview of almost the changes in Irish society over the decades, and we all know the landmark changes in terms of the introduction of greater supports for lone parents, what started off as the named unmarried mother's allowance. I think that probably signaled a significant drop in non-marital birth adoptions, but also the changing nature of Irish society, the changing nature of how families are formed and how families developed, and we see all sorts of family formation and to use that term, modern family. I think adoption statistics give an overview, and we would be doing some extensive research looking back on trends in domestic Irish adoption. It's something that the authority is particularly interested in, that not only do we look forward, but we do comprehensive research on where we have come from and maybe looking to the future.
And isn't it really encouraging in many, many ways to see the level of children available for adoption drop from the 1,000 to 1,400, which was prevalent throughout the 1960s, to now, when we look in the noughties numbers, and I'm talking about from 2010 onwards, of 189,39 children in 2011 and down to 79 in 2019. That's a happier occasion and more reflective of how tolerant Irish society has become, is it not?
Absolutely. I agree completely. I think it's a mark of how we have matured as a society, how we've rebalanced and recalibrated our support for families, for all sorts of families. And I think we look now that there is no stigma or shame for lone parent families or families that are parenting in different ways, and nor should there be. And adoption is, I suppose, quite a bespoke response for a small number of children. It is complex and it is positive for those children who are adopted, but we must always look at the family that a child is born into as their primary caregivers, if at all possible. And in those small number of instances where it isn't, that's where the role of the adoption authority comes in a very compassionate and considered way.
And I have to say, considered way it is, having read the whole report. I'm fascinated by it. And if we might end on a very, very happy statistic indeed, and aside from that, the prospective adoptees have dropped to such low numbers, with most parents, as I said, just to reflect again, that of 22,772 births outside of marriage in 2019, only 79 children came up for adoption. But the real happy note is that since 1953 up to this year, all of 44,763 children have been adopted. And I think on that, that's a really happy and a really important statistic.
Thank you.
It's a marvellous report. The Adoption Authority of Ireland 2020 annual report. Chief Executive of the Authority is Patricia Carey. And thank you so much for your time, Patricia, this morning.
Thank you.
You're very welcome indeed. Now, what am I moving to? I'm going to have a break, and after this we're going to be talking about all those natural cures, etc., we talked about yesterday.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, good morning, Clement. Kira, I know your show is not really for requests, but would you mention Aoife Leahy and Brian Salmon getting married today in Milltown Church at 3 o'clock, wishing them a very happy life together from everyone on Barrenstown Lane. I love that name. Up the lilies. Thanks, Clem. And Kira, you have some best wishes as well, I believe.
Yeah, I do. First off, starting with the under-14s, the Sarsfield under-14 girls are playing in the final of the championship against Kilcullen on Monday, Bank Holiday Monday, and a special best wishes to Grace Stanley, that comes comes in from her grandparents, the lovely Paddy and Kit, who I was chatting with a little earlier on. Also on the phone, Clem, I was speaking with McKenna Hollidge, and they want to wish Kildare a win. Oh, that's a Freudian slip. Maybe we're going to win. They want to wish Kildare the very best of luck this weekend, and in particular Dara Malone and Jimmy Highland, but of course the whole team. And then, Clem, in terms of Olympics, I've been on the phone with Beatty Gordon, and she noted that her nephew, Dermot McDermott, is refereeing in the Olympics, who we did mention last week, but Beatty would just like another shout-out for Dermot. He's from Newbridge. It's great. It's great sporting news on the Kildare front this weekend.
And we're always happy to do that. Someone's saying, Michael D will do whatever the government tells him to do, says Bill. No, he won't. Funny how he's complaining about all the legislation he has to sign at such short notice. But Bill, we would be the very first to criticise the President if he was signing bills into law that were later discovered to be not fully comprehensive. He has a state council. It's not just Michael D. Higgins. The President is talking about convening the state council, which takes a couple of days to do, and then going through very, very important law. People need to have a proper understanding about this and stop going on with Michael D is moaning, Michael D is moaning. The President of this country is constitutionally tasked with protecting all of us in terms of the laws that are signed, and that needs the expert view of the State Council. So we need to get the understanding in relation to that, please. OK, keep the messages coming anyway, and I promise I'll read them out, even if I get annoyed by some of them. All right. We talked yesterday and we got such a plethora of messages in from listeners regarding how to cure warts, how to cure chilblains, dock leaves, what they do for stinging nettles, and all the other things that people get, the conditions. And we were of the view, and a very widespread view, that there is huge interest in this country in terms of what were natural cures. Faith healing came into the mix yesterday, and we heard so many stories from listeners. And it followed consideration of an article in the Irish Times which showed research into natural products is on the rise again, as scientists in Ireland become 21st century medicine hunters. I wonder, have I got a medicine hunter on the line in Dr. Helen Sheridan, who's professor, Associate Professor of Natural Product Chemistry and Academic Director of NatPro at the School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences in Trinity College. Are you a medicine hunter, Dr. Helen Sheridan?
Well, good morning. I hope you can hear me because I'm under a cloud down in County Kerry and I'm moving around trying to get a good signal. I believe I am a medicine hunter myself and the team that I have gathered together in Trinity. And we have been working in this area for many, many years. Looking at those stories that you appear to have been listening to, I'm only sorry I didn't hear your show yesterday. I would love to have heard about people talking about removing warts and dock leaves.
I got one of the biggest ever responses to bringing up the topic during our pay-per-view, and it continued for the whole 2 hours of the programme. People faxing, or people WhatsApping or texting us about, I have a cure for this, I can cure that, there's a guy who can cure this in our area. We covered the whole gamut.
Well, I'll be back on to you, let me tell you, because one of the things that we're doing lots of work, and obviously one of our main focuses is to try and find new therapies for diseases that have unmet clinical need. And what that means is there are many diseases out there and we have no cure for them. And so we're looking for new medicines wherever we can. And many people across scientific arena across the world are looking at cultural use of medicine. So you kind of hear of, everybody will have heard of the rainforests in South America and how, you know, the lack or the destruction of biodiversity might be getting rid of plants with new medicines that we don't even know about. And what we've done in the last 2 years here because of a very significant grant that we got is to turn our lens of science onto the biodiversity and the stories of Ireland, to see what might be here or what might be in different environments of biodiversity that we don't necessarily treasure the way we should.
And now, you're working with enzymologists, biologists, botanists, and multidisciplinary teams and everything else. Let me ask you a straight-up question, Dr. Sheridan. do you actually believe in all these cures? We had, for example, mentions yesterday of Faith Healer who blows into people's mouths to close to cure thrush. In fact, we got a whole range of cures for thrush. We had people who were taking soil off new graves. And we had other people having blood rubbed on them. And we even had a publican who gave someone 50 cents and said, right, I'll buy your warts and they'll be gone in 2 weeks, etc., etc. Do you believe in all of this?
Well, I believe in some things. And we have done some really interesting analysis on an old archive that exists up in UCD that was compiled in the 1930s in Ireland. It's called the Dukas website. It's a database, and the database is compiled by children going out and gathering these stories in their communities just at the foundation of the Irish state. And there's many of those stories, you know, of buying warts, selling warts, of all sorts of different kind of activities. So we're most interested in more tangible things, I suppose, plant-based cures, bacterial-based cure. Soil is interesting. Water is interesting.
Well, yesterday, Dr. Sheridan, we had huge debate here on dock leaves and whether they actually cure nettle stings or not, with many saying yes and others saying no. And I put in my own contribution about dandelions, are colloquially called pissy beds, for obviously the cause that they're supposed to do if you pick them. And I made a point about if you break the stem, and you see that little milky liquid, and you rub that, and it works, and so on and so forth.
Well, that's really interesting. There's now, so we've got the old stories of Ireland, but we also now have contemporary science where people have looked and investigated the chemistry and the biology of some of these plants and their extracts. And one thing I can tell you about the dandelion is it produces a chemical, or it produces an enzyme called protein serase protein. And they are antiviral. They can kill viruses, and warts are caused by viruses. So we are tracking many of we're tracking the stories of Ireland and trying to see what is authentic, how we can link the cultural use with modern science and see, can we validate those uses, or is there anything there that could now be used?
Mm. What plant did you just mention there? Dandelions, was it?
Yeah, the dandelion, and that protein serase enzyme is present in the room, and a small amount in that milky sap that's applied to warts.
Right, and that sap, is that sap found in the root, or is it found in the stem?
The sap is in the stem, but most of the research has been done on the same enzymes and type of substance in the root. But
that's very interesting.
Nobody has really looked at the stem yet. So what we're revealing also are gaps in our knowledge where there's a very good sense that if we look there for this, we may find it.
Well, Helen, that's very interesting, because I, as a child, in where I grew up in County Clare, it was absolutely widespread that, you know, if you had warts or anything, break the stem of a dandelion, the little milky liquid, rub that on it, and so forth. Now, we had a mention yesterday to a slug and the power it can do, but what's it about snails that offer great hope to find new treatments for intractable pain?
Yeah. Well, the snails are, now they're not kind of the snails we'd see at home or running around, you know, not running, but kind of motoring slowly across the ground. The snails that are of interest here are called, they're cone snails, and they're a marine species mainly found in the Philippine Islands around both coasts. And the story of that is a wonderful story where a young man was observing, a young boy really, observing the rockers around the coast, around his father's man, watching the catching and kind of shooting out a little proboscis in rock pools and killing and stunning prey and then sucking them in. And that started an entire investigation into those cone snails to see how that happened. And what science has revealed is series of proteins in those snails that are really, really potent analgesics. They are painkillers at a very, very significant level.
I think what I said yesterday was that there's so much we know in the 21st century, but there is so much we don't know, and in particular in terms of the cures that are available in nature that are not fully yet explored. I know you're going to be studying and unlocking nature's pharmacy from bogland species. You'll be working with Teagasc, the National Parks and Wildlife Services, the Irish Peatlands Council, Bord na Mona, and indeed examining the commercial uses and potential of native Irish bog plants, bog waters, and so on and so forth. But I know from what came in from our listeners yesterday, and indeed from personal experience, that there is a basis for all of this belief.
And I'd love to hear from those people myself. I think we'd be putting out a call, because it's such a cultural wealth that we have, and we need to stop looking to other horizons and look inward at what we've got ourselves as well, and see what value there is, both in terms of potential medicines, but also in the story of Ireland. You know, it's got multiple values, I think, this type of science.
Indeed. Look, it's great talking to you, but I get out under that Kerry cloud, because it can unload lots on you, but we got through it anyway. The line held up decently. It's great to talk to you on that, and we wanted to follow up based on our listeners' input yesterday. Dr. Helen Sheridan, Associate Professor of Natural Product Chemistry and Academic Director of NatPro in Trinity College. Great talking to you. Enjoy your bank holiday weekend down in Kerry.
I'm going to the bog now.
All right. Enjoy the visit to the bog, and good morning.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Couple of messages then. A listener says, Michael D certainly does not follow like a sheep. He's a wonderful president with a fantastic intellect and has a great team around him. Do we realise how lucky we are? And I have to say, I concur 100% with that particular view in regards to our president. Clem, she must have been bursting for the toilet going to the bog, says Shay. Well, I think it's for scientific purposes that she is indeed going to the bog. Now let's turn our attention to the weekend action, and of course the Kildare GAA senior football team has been announced for Sunday, as we reminded you earlier in the morning. Interesting selection that it is too, in regards to the team that has been announced. And it is Mark Donlan of Maynooth in goal, a full back line of Mark Dempsey, Moorfield, Mick O'Grady, Selbridge, the vice captain, and Owen Doyle of Nace. Half back line of Ryan Houlihan, Moorfield, David Highland of Athyde, the team captain, and Kevin Flynn, Selbridge. Centre fielders are Luke Flynn, Johnstown Bridge, and Aaron Masterson of Moorfield. A half forward line of Alex Byrne, Nace, Fergal Conway, Selbridge, Neil Flynn, Maynooth, and the full forward line of Ben McCormack, Sarsfields, Daniel Flynn, Johnstown Bridge, and Jimmy Highland, Ballyteague. Before we consider that from our two regular contributors, Leinster Leader sports editor Tommy Callan and KFM match commentator Ger McNally, I want to take you back 21 years to the Sunday game.
To Cullum, if that's the best exhibition of championship football I've seen this year, if it's the best Cullum has seen, it's certainly not the best I've seen. It's a good performance by Dublin, but they're against a woeful and inept opposition. An inept opposition where a forward line, not one of them could manage to score from play. But of course, what's new with Kildare forwards? A team who continue to shot past the ball, who take eight passes to get to a 50-yard line. A team who over-carry the ball. Christ, they're so easy to defend against. And like I said, they have two attacking options. The two corner forwards, very lively, but there's no point in playing the ball into two corners, to two lively little corner forwards, because then they have to work it all the way back in again. So, very good performance by them.
The thing about it is, Colin Moore, why is this the case with Kildare forwards? I mean, the Sheepdown and Connemara know this about them. Passing tourists in Kildare can shout in the windows of people, you can't score. They know this. Why don't they do something about it?
Well, I suppose you have to cut your cloth to suit. Kildare obviously don't have the type of players that would fit into those positions that are able to get the ball, go by their men and score, or I'm sure Mick O'Dwyer would have them. Carl O'Dwyer is on now. Maybe he'll get a few points.
You're left with two square pegs and round holes in Dermot Early and Ronis. We need their two centre field.
Well, we know what happened after that, because Kildare scored two goals in about a minute after that. But that's an edited version, because it was even more disparaging of named Kildare players, and we're not about to embarrass them further. Tommy Callaghan, good morning to you.
Morning, Clem.
Yeah, that was then, Tommy. This is now. But it certainly made for analysis that still irks Kildare people, and most recently echoed by the comments of Sean Kavanagh.
Absolutely. I think some of these, listen, going back to going back to 20 years ago plus, what was said at that particular programme was just so much out of line, and it was so much disrespectful. And there's a little bit of that going on again this year. I think there's some commentators out there that have their views, which are quite entitled to, and everybody knows that Dublin are hot favourites to win on Sunday. But you have to show a bit of respect to a team that's after getting into the Leinster final, a team that's after qualifying for Division 1 of the Alliance League next year, and to totally disregard a Leinster final as just run over and go straight into the All-Ireland semi-final. It's showing a total disrespect to Kildare, and it's very annoying, but hopefully it'll spur the lads on.
All right, we'll get to the line-out in just a moment. Tommy, are we overstating the impact on Dublin's prospects with the loss of the various players who have departed the scene from Cluxton onwards?
Well, I'm not overstating it, to be quite honest with you. I mean, some of the so-called experts might be overstating it. Dublin in the first half against Meath were as good as in the semi-final, they were as good as they were in the last couple of years. They fell away a little bit in the second half, but you have to give Meath credit. I mean, again, they're saying Dublin sat down, Dublin laid back, but you have to give Meath credit. Meath threw everything at them in the second half and did particularly well. So I mean, it's the same kind of disrespect that some of these experts are showing to Kildare. A total disrespect. I mean, to say that Dublin are slipping. Right, Dublin are after losing some top players, and them players will not be replaced by the same players of the same talent. And that's not disrespect to the lads coming in. The lads coming in are a hell of a good players, but they're not up to that standard. I mean, if Dublin can replace four or five or six players with the same talent as the lads that's retiring, well, Dublin will win the next six All-Irelands, never mind the last six.
All right, Chair McNally, you're taking all of this.
Yeah, just I suppose from the pundits' point of view, like, it is kind of infuriating, really, that these lads get paid huge amounts of money and they only focus on one team, and really. Right from the very start of the championship, they only focus on three or four teams. Really, it is kind of very annoying. And for all the talk, there could be a D championship coming in, or the Falcon Cup, whatever it is. I mean, imagine the coverage that teams in that competition would get. Where when there's an A championship at the moment, there's only one championship, and still all the focus on three or four teams. So yeah, it is definitely annoying. But at the same time, it's up to Kildare to go and shove those words down people's throats on Sunday. Nobody really outside of Kildare is expecting anything from this Kildare team, and even within Kildare there's not many people expecting a huge amount from them. So it's up to the lads to take to the field on Sunday to show what they're made of, and with everybody writing them off and not even giving them a chance to get in within 10 points of Dublin, this is the chance to win pressure free and really show what they can do. And they should take an awful lot from what Meath did in that second half against Dublin, because Dublin were such a huge score ahead that very often in the past that score could have went from 10 points to 15 to 20, and Dublin would have absolutely massacred Meath. But Meath didn't drop their heads, and they just stayed in the game, tried to get the next score.
Okay, now there is that low sense of expectation and low sense of occasion around the county. I mean, Pat Costa has been out and about in the OB drumming up support, and that we've the flags hanging out here. But certainly I think that there is that view out in the county. Asher, look, we haven't the hope. The buzz isn't the same as there. But let's get to the more positives. Tommy, what do you make of that team that's been announced?
Well, the one surprise is Owen Dyle's name on it. Apart from that, there's no surprise on it, really. Now, whether Owen Dyle is fit, to be quite honest with you, I don't think he will. I'm be fairly sure he won't be, actually. But that's the team, the name. Maybe Owen is smart to making a miraculous recovery since I spoke to him exactly a week ago today. But leaving that aside, I mean, the team is more, everybody was expecting Luke Flynn to come back in when Kevin was unfortunately injured. Kevin Feely was unfortunately injured. It's a very it's a mixed team, in the sense that some of these lads are very young, they're very inexperienced, and in many respects it's going to be a huge day for them, and it'll stand to them. It's going to be a huge learning experience for them. They're going in with no pressure on them, as Owen Doyle says, the pressure is not on the younger lads, the pressure is on the older lads. And the team itself is more or less taking that Owen Doyle won't be there, there'll be another one more change in that. And that'll probably, I would imagine, the one I'd imagine would come in there would be Shea Ryan. But again, we don't be at training, so we don't know exactly what's going on. But as I say, it's a young team, it's an inexperienced team in many parts. But they've come a long way, they've had a good league, they've had a decent championship, they've had their ups and downs in matches they won and matches they lost. They had the last three matches they had sewn up a long way out, and were still struggling at the end to keep in front. That's something you can't do against Dublin, that's a certainty. Look, they're going in as underdogs, we all know that. And I'm looking forward to it, to be quite honest with you. I'm just hoping that if they play as well as they can play, Clem, I know I'm not saying they're going to win a Leinster title, I'm not saying, but this Kildare team, they're making progress. They've made a lot of progress already this year under Jack O'Connor, and I think they're an up-and-coming team, regardless of what happens on Sunday.
Up-and-coming team, Ger, do you share Tommy's positive outlook?
Yeah, absolutely. In an ideal world, there's no doubt about it that Jack O'Connor would like to be able to select Paul Cribben, Kevin Feeley and Owen Doyle, for those three players to be fully fit, and the loss of those three players, potentially if Owen Doyle misses out as well, is a huge, huge blow. But at the same time, some of these young players that have been given their opportunity through the year by Jack O'Connor really have taken their chance, and they'll come into the game. They won't have the baggage that maybe some of the experienced lads have had of defeats in Croke Park, heavy defeats against Dublin. A lot of these younger players would have, you know, been confident going up against Dublin at underage level and would have beaten them in the past. So they'll come in with a fresh attitude, and hopefully that can spread through the team, because Kildare have forwards on the pitch that can hurt Dublin. Absolutely no doubt about it. That Daniel Flynn showed in glimpses what he could do the last day against Meath in his first start in 2 months, so he had that game under his belt. Hopefully he'll be even better again, and there's no doubt about it that Dublin will be afraid of Daniel Flynn. And Neil Flynn has been absolutely superb this year as well. He's another player that can hurt Dublin. Jimmy Hyland as well also has really grown into a senior jersey. So there's three forwards that can score for Kildare. Now there's other scorers needed around the pitch as well. Kildare are really going to trouble Dublin, but thinking back to 2017 in the final, Daniel has often spoken about a missed goal chance that Stephen Clarkson made a great save. It could have cut Kildare back to within 3 points of Dublin with about 20 minutes to go. I think that's the key. If Kildare get chances, they absolutely have
okay.
to take them. There won't be many of them, so they will have to take them when they come along.
All right, we'll have full commentary with Ger and Johnny Doyle. Peter is away, but Pat Costello is joining the team for Sunday in association with Hand and Concrete Products of Robertstown. So Sports Beat from 2 o'clock with a look back to the highlights of the semi-final. All of that with Paul Power on Sunday Sports Beat. We'll let you go there, Ger, for the moment, because we're getting a small bit tight for time. And I want to just a brief overview, Tommy. Tomorrow, the Haven Hire 2020 Senior Hurling Championship Final between Naas and Confey takes place in St. Conlett's Park at 3 o'clock. I mean, with all due respect to Confey, Naas must be raging hot favourites.
Naas should be hot favourites again. There's no doubt in the world about that. But listen, Confey, it's a bit like the match on Sunday. Confey, they had a very good win. Now, it seems a long time ago now. They had a very good win in the semi final over Selbridge. They got goals at vital stages that match, and they were good. There were a couple of lads there now that if Naas come in undercooked at all, Confey, you'd have to fancy Naas. I mean, don't get me wrong, you'd have to fancy Naas to win this. And I was talking to Paul Dibley there the other day, and he knows that they've a job on their hands, but he said, we're going out there, and he says, we'll give it all and we'll see what happens.
All right, we'll have coverage of that game with Jerry. That's at 3 o'clock tomorrow. It'll be preceded, Tommy, strange to find Kyle Dove playing for their senior status against intermediate champions Maynooth. That game's at 12:30.
Clem, I can't understand this, to be quite honest with you. Kyle Dove were beaten last week in a relegation final. Maynooth won the intermediate championship last week, and now they find themselves playing in the playoff. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. It doesn't happen in senior club football until there. The intermediate champions come up senior.
Yeah. And those that lose the relegation final go down.
They go down.
Strange one indeed. And Tommy, finally, there's also another significant game on tomorrow evening. Well, this evening, for example, the EMS Copier Senior Football League Division 2 final takes place at 7:30, Clane against Eastown. But tomorrow evening, there's a very intriguing game in the EMS Copier Senior Football League Division 1 final, the Sash and Raheens.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this one as well. I've seen both teams now playing in the league a couple of times, each of them. And no doubt the two best teams in the league that have performed in the league are in the final on tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock in Newbridge. Sarsfields, again, will be going in his favour. It's naturally enough, the one of the big powerhouses of Kildare football, club football. Raheem's, Pádraig Brennan is the manager now in Sarsfields. This is his first year. Former county star and great footballer in his own right. He's had to give a lot, in fairness to him, he's had to give a lot of young lads an opportunity throughout the league to show what they could do for him. Raheem's, on the other hand, Frank Hanafy, former Murphy star, is the head man there. And listen, Raheem's, they have played the last couple of matches. They drew with Moorfield, they lost to Sarsfields by 1 point, and they defeated a tie by 3. That's good form. You know, that is good form. And a Leader Cup win for Raheem's would be huge. It would be huge for them. They haven't won it since back in the 70s. But it's a huge game for them. It'll mean a lot more to them than the middle of Sarsfields. Now, that's not, there's always, there has been rivalry, Clem, a lot of right down the years. Sarsfields and Raheem's. A lot of people might realise this, but that's fairly close to a local derby. You know, I know Moorfield and Sarsfields are the real local derby, but the next one up from Sarsfields' point of view is Raheem's.
All right, well, it's a busy, busy weekend indeed on the sporting front. You can read Tommy's previews and his team's previews in this week's edition of the Leinster Leader, and full reviews and results, of course, on Tuesday, including reports on the Leinster final, all of that, and we have that full coverage throughout the weekend as well. Tommy, thank you very much. Have a great, great sporting weekend. It promises to be very interesting, including tomorrow and Sunday, and we have live coverage from the hurling final tomorrow, and of course full commentary on Sunday with Ger and Johnny on the Leinster final as well. So don't forget to join us for all of that. Just before I go, to wish Declan Byrne the best of luck over the weekend, because he's doing a sponsored 100 kilometre cycle to raise funds for the Newbridge Family Resource Centre, and that's on Sunday. He's going to cycle from Athy to Kilcullen, Naas, Newbridge, Kildare Town, Monastreven and back to Athy. So if you see him on his travels, give him a big shout out. And a GoFundMe page has been set up for the Newbridge Family Resource Centre, and Instagram pages at newbridgefrc.ie, and also you can call into the reception and make a donation as well. Every €5 counts, and they'd love if everyone could share and help Newbridge Family Resource Centre reach their €1,000 goal. So good luck to Declan Byrne with that cycle from Athy around the county and back on Sunday, this Sunday. Have a great, great weekend. John Dunn is up next. We gotta go. We're late. Thanks to producer Kieran Noble, the other Kira Plunkett's in the KFM newsroom.